The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
Mr. Parker, excuse me. We're from the Attorney General's office. We need to ask you a few questions about an article you wrote. Inside Dream World.
Really? We're going to do this again? You people are unbelievable.
Excuse me?
I wouldn't give up my sources when you killed the article. So why would I give them up now?
Because it looks like one of your sources was murdered.
Do you recognize him, Mr. Parker?
Bronson. He was murdered?
Yes, and now other people's lives are at stake. Now tell us everything you know about Dreamworld.
First time I heard about Dreamworld was in 03. I was serving with 173rd in Kandahar at the time. The story stuck with me, so about a year ago I started poking around. Found out it was a forward operating base in northern Afghanistan. Launching pad for covert special ops in the region.
Did Bronson work at that base?
Yeah, I'd heard his name a couple of times, so I approached him.
What'd he tell you?
Nothing at all. In fact, he seemed pretty freaked out that I knew he was stationed there. Asked me how much I knew about him, Dreamworld, about what he'd done.
Wait, what did he mean by that?
Never told me. Whatever it was, he sure as hell didn't want it getting out. Next thing I know, my editor's killing the story. At the personal request of Defense Secretary Reed.
These conversations that you had with Bronson, did he ever mention the word Valkyrie?
No, why? What's Valkyrie?
Wait. The Secretary of Defense himself called to kill the story? That's unusual.
Try unheard of.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing, it's just right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
The case of Julian Assange symbolizes how bankrupt the West has become. So says Salim Mansour, who joins us today to expand on that theme. Is that where we're going to be going with our conversation today, Salim?
Yeah, I hope so.
You hope so? Okay, well, we never know when we get together. But we will be getting started right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because, as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Now, Salim, just in case there are those people out there listening who aren't familiar with Julian Assange, or they know what he is and they forgot or whatever, I just thought I'd do a very quick summary from Wikipedia, so take it for what it is, and I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs. And it says, Julian Paul Assange, born July 3rd, 1971, is an Australian editor, publisher, and activist who founded WikiLeaks in 2006. He came to international attention in 2010 after WikiLeaks published a series of leaks from Chelsea Manning, a former United States Army intelligence analyst, footage of a U.S. airstrike in Baghdad, U.S. military logs from the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, and U.S. diplomatic cables. Assange has won multiple awards for publishing and journalism. He was raised in several towns in Australia until his family settled to Melbourne in his mid-teens. He became involved in the hacker community and was convicted for hacking in 1996. Following the establishment of WikiLeaks, Assange was its editor when it published the Bank Julius Baer documents, footage of the 2008 Tibetan unrest, and report on political killings in Kenya with the Sunday Times. Now, in June 2024, Assange agreed a plea deal with the American prosecutors. He pleaded guilty to an Espionage Act charge of conspiring to obtain and disclose classified U.S. national defense documents. Under the terms of the deal, U.S. prosecutors sought a sentence that allowed for his immediate release. He was ordered to instruct WikiLeaks to return or destroy unpublished documents and provide an affidavit. Following the hearing, Assange departed for Australia and arrived in Canberra on the 26th of June, 2024. So that's a brief recap. Well, I got to tell you, Salim, it's been my experience that the more I hear about Julian Assange, the less I feel like I know, especially from all the stories circulating, even in social media right now. And we have a number of audio bites today that would suggest that Assange is everything from a hero to a psyop or controlled opposition. And I always get a little bit nervous when the discussion is more focused on the messenger than on the message. I don't know if you feel the same about that, but of course the very fact that he's been released at all and the timing of his release do open themselves to speculation. What's your speculation on this?
Well, before I get into speculation, let's say it's a pleasure to be here with you. Bob, I don't know how long it's been that I haven't sat across your studio.
Yeah, we're here live together with each other right
That's
now.
That's right.
And it's probably been about 2 years since we were in that situation. It's
2 years, huh?
Yeah.
So it's a pleasure to be here and to sit with you this warm afternoon and talk a little about Julian Assange. Neither you nor I are, in that sense, looking into the biographical detail of Julian. Do we know him and what we know of him is basically, again, from the media. But we all know, you know, I know, most of us know, that media spins narratives. Media doesn't report objective facts, you know. That means it creates a narrative and broadcasts it to shape the thinking and ideas
yes.
and values of the people. So the media is a propaganda arm of the power that runs our society, the government. So whatever is filtered out through the media about Julian, a lot of it has to be filtered out to try to come to understanding what happened, not only with Julian Assange, but what is happening with our environment, the media environment. How is it that it is so polluted, you know, that most people with any degree of common sense and some understanding of their own past, their own society, their own history, no longer trust the mainstream media? I mean, it is not a diversion. I'm not moving away from the purpose that we got together to speak about Julian, but Julian in terms about the media, about the politics, about where the West is, about the United States as the empire of lies. Everybody tuned in, on the mainstream media, tuned in to watch the CNN debate
Oh, yeah.
of President Joe Biden and President or former President Donald J. Trump, you know? And from 2020 election onward, the media has covered in every possible way for Biden that there's nothing wrong with Biden, that Biden is fit, that Biden is okay, that Biden is handling America's domestic politics, foreign policy, etc. What did we see finally? Everybody saw that Biden is just a walking shell of what T.S. Eliot called a long time ago, a man with straw filled in his head, right?
I remember you sitting here calling Biden that before the last election.
Yeah, exactly.
And you were wondering why they would even run him. So is that part of the bankruptcy of the West you're talking about?
First of all, what the media tells the common American, what the media tells the common Canadian, that what the media tells the people in the collective West of who to love, who to hate, who to admire, who's the bad guy, etc., etc., right? So the media has a lot going in creating this narrative about Julian Assange, you know, that led to Julian Assange being put away for 14 years. A young man when, you know, he's relatively still a young man, born in 71. 14 years ago, he was barely getting into his 40s. He was in his, you know, late months of his 30s, and he was put away, you know. His children don't know him. He's got two boys. They don't know him. His life was taken away from him. And what was it about? He was finally charged with the Espionage Act by the American government and removed to Belmarsh Prison, the closest thing that the British have to a gulag, where he was put into solitary confinement for 23 hours in a 24-hour day, you know? So let's now backtrack. Let's unpack what happened.
Yeah.
So what happened? You know, you just gave a glimpse of it from that Wikimedia snapshot.
Okay, let's do that right after this break.
Okay.
This is Dan Dix here reporting for Press for Truth. Apparently, I have a very unpopular opinion amongst those in the field of alternative media, and that is the fact that the intelligence asset, Julian Assange, has just completed his mission. I think just the fact that the alternative media has embraced and trusted WikiLeaks as a source was done by design. The best option is to control the opposition, to create the opposition and to place one of their men at the top of that so as to be able to steer the alternative media into a direction that will never expose any real conspiracies. For me, the red flags were going off left, right, and center when this guy, Julian Assange, in the very beginning, made the bold and emphatic claim that there is no conspiracy with 9/11. In fact, he said 9/11 truthers are stupid.
There are many that are also saying that he was not in prison so much as he was sitting in a countryside mansion at the home of Von Smith, and he is the owner of a news organization that is funded by George Soros. So he comes from a very strange upbringing that was very well connected, and then he became involved in a hacker community, and he was convicted for hacking in 1996. Again, my first thought is, oh, did he get out of that by consenting to be a actor or a figure in a psyop called Here's Where You Can Get the Truth, The Person's a Martyr, and the person is buoyed up by the media to be a hero? These are all questions. These are all things to ponder. Not telling you how to think about Julian Assange. You know, I know a lot of people go both ways on this. He's a hero. He's a journalist that's been victimized. But I think this is stuff that's worth thinking about.
I watched the coverage of the release of journalist Julian Assange. I'm no closer to the truth of it all than any other member of the public, but there's no missing the determination out there, even now, by all manner of commentators, great and small, to seek to portray Assange as a sinner, someone not to be trusted. Now the factions, angry and frustrated by all that's truly wrong, are entrenched in their own small camps, camps that are getting smaller by the day, lobbing grenades at one another. While it remains as true as on day one of all the malevolent nonsense of the COVID debacle, that none of the guilty are being held to account, one voice after another asking some good questions has been ripped to shreds, discredited and cast down, not by the enemy, but by their own side. There's a purity test out there that no one can pass. Any past failing, real or imagined, is deemed to be grounds for cancellation by our own side. The most unforgivable sin of all is not having been aware and vocal soon enough, of having taken too long to realise what was going on. And this accusation is used to silence and censor almost at will. Among the most effective slurs applied with equal vigour by both the bad actors and those supposed to be fighting for freedom is that of controlled opposition. I looked up the term and found controlled opposition is the use of black propaganda and saboteurs who claim to oppose a particular faction but are in fact working for the faction. I've lost count of how many times I've been labelled controlled opposition. It's pretty much a daily occurrence, but it's thrown around like confetti. There is no way of successfully disproving the allegation of being controlled opposition. The only option is either to sit down and shut up or carry on under the weight of having been so attacked. As I say, this relentless attrition, the self-inflicted wounds, leads to one destination and one destination only, which is the bleeding to death of any hope of concerted opposition.
Okay, Salim, so give us your narrative, your own narrative on this situation.
Well, it's narrative or objective fact, because what happened was, as you mentioned, Chelsea Manning was a U.S. Army soldier who was assigned to the intelligence unit in Iraq to be an intelligence analyst. in 2009, I believe, and she was in Iraq, and she became a whistleblower, and she passed on, or she leaked, something like over 700,000 classified and non-classified or unclassified documents to various sources, and among them was the WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, who was the publisher of WikiLeaks. And what made Julian Assange, in a sense, the international figure that went round the world, was when Assange published in 2010 the 38-minute video clip that came from Chelsea Manning of the shooting by American soldiers on a chopper in Baghdad, the killing of, you know, civilians walking down the street in 2007 in a particular street, and the chopper came down upon them, and it was all recorded, the exchange that took place between the pilot, the soldier, the army control that gave them the clearance to open fire. And among the people killed were Reuters journalists and reporters that were reporting on the war from the ground in Iraq. The war was over. It is now occupation that is going on, 2007. And Assange sent it out. And that began the hunt for Assange. Assange, I believe, traveled to Sweden. And there a cooked-up charge was presented of sexual assault and rape. He was arrested, but the Swedish held him for 2 years, and there was no evidence. You know, it was a frame-up. It was against a smear.
Isn't it funny how anybody who says anything against the government is suddenly subject to a sexual assault or other?
Yeah, exactly. So this was the smear that began against him. And then the Swedes let him go because there was nothing that they could hold on to him. He came to England, I believe, London, and then they were after him. The British were after him on the instruction of the American, and he took shelter. The Bolivian government gave him political asylum in their embassy in London, you know. And from 2012 to whatever, the next 5 years or so, he was in the Bolivian embassy in a room, political asylum. He couldn't go anywhere, you know. And then, finally, I think it was in 2017, I mean, there's so many dates over here, that the British government sent in, there was a change of government in Bolivia. And so a conservative government came to power in Bolivia, I think it was in 2017 or thereabouts. And they basically withdrew the diplomatic cover on Assange. And the British sent in the police and pulled him out of the embassy, and the Americans charged him with Espionage Act. And the long and the short of it is, the British then took him and put him in the high security prison, Belmarsh, on solitary confinement, where he had been held from 2019 till his release last week, okay, on the Espionage Act. So let us, the time that we have, try to understand what happened. He was running WikiLeaks, and he was putting out what whistleblowers like Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, and others were coming up, given their access or their working environment from which they dissented and told the story about what actually was happening. For instance, in the case of Edward Snowden, who again released a lot of leaks and documents, leaked documents, revealing, because he was working for the National Security Agency in America. He was an NSA intelligence analyst and worker, IT man. And what he revealed, what he was discontented with, what he dissented, and what he tried to talk to his senior officials and people around him, that it was a complete decimation was taking place, trashing was taking place of the First Amendment rights of American citizens. Because what he was leaking, talking about, was this massive surveillance state that had emerged. And NSA was the center through which the surveillance was taking place of all telephone communication, all computer communication, etc. And not only the Americans, but the Americans were getting the Five Eyes intelligence agency. The Five Eyes are, you know, UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. They were getting the Five Eyes intelligence agency to work together with NSA in monitoring everything about the citizen, what they suspected or what they found or what they thought, you know, was important to monitor and surveil. So this is what Edward Snowden revealed. That's what Chelsea Manning leaked. The war crimes that Washington was engaged in. The war crimes, mm-hmm. you know. The Iraq war was a criminal action, you know. There was no weapons of mass destruction that we found out later on, you know. Scott Ritter was the weapons inspector who had signed off on it. And the Americans then did not put the resolution on the table to get the UN Security Council authorization to go into Iraq, 2003. You see, that's why Jean Chrétien refused to participate in the Iraq war, because it had no UN authorization. Mm-hmm. Okay, so WikiLeaks...
One of the few things a Canadian... liberals did properly.
but as I've talked about, and that's another subject, there's no left and right. The question now becomes, you know, what Julian Assange has talked about. It is Orwellian that wars depend upon lies. So peace depends upon truth. We have to speak the truth or get the message out. What are the truth? What is the objective reality? Both the left and the right are totally engaged in. They're the two arms or the two wings of the empire. An empire is made up of lies. So
that would suggest that it's very important to maintain that narrative. You began your own account of this when you said you have a narrative or the objective fact. How do you know? Because even the objective fact comes out of a narrative, does it not?
No. Objective fact doesn't come out of the narrative.
How else do you learn about
it? Objective facts stand on its own. And then narratives are created to sell in terms of what perspective, what bias, what prejudices that objective fact represent. There are many classic stories, but I will share with you the classic story of the objective fact, what it is an objective fact. After the end of World War I, just when the Treaty of Versailles has been signed and the whole thing is going on, the Paris Peace Conference, Prime Minister Clemenceau is facing the media at that time. You're going back more than 100 years, you know, in Paris. He's facing the media, and the media starts grilling him upon the role of the great powers that led to World War I. You know, what the Germans had done, what the French had done, what the French had instigated, and so on and so forth. France did not have a lily white hand in the war. Britain did not have a lily white hand. Nobody had a lily white hand. But here's the interesting thing that Clemenceau said. Whoever you hold responsible, go ahead. That's your story. But it was not Belgium that invaded Germany. It was Germany that invaded Belgium that started the war.
Right.
Right? It was not America that went and attacked Tokyo Bay in 1941, December. It was the Japanese Navy that attacked Pearl Harbor. So that is an objective fact. Now, history will disclose over time. That's the investigation, just as what WikiLeaks was releasing, the documents. From that moment, what happened? Because a lot of it is covered. Now we know for sure as we can be, that Pearl Harbor was a bait that Roosevelt set up for the Japanese. He allowed Pearl Harbor to happen, right? It's also the same thing as JFK's killing. The objective fact is JFK was shot in Dallas on November the 22nd, 1963. But now...
But the only way we know that is from people having investigated it and told us their narratives. I mean, I wouldn't even know this guy Julian Assange even existed.
But that's your problem. Everybody saw...
I never
everybody
met the
knew.
Guy.
No, just hold on. Everybody knew when the bullet got President Kennedy and he fell in his car... It became the hottest news.
Yes.
Right? So everybody knew. We have all the takes. So president was dead an hour later when Cronkite announced it. The president is dead. 60 years have gone by. We are dealing with narrative. Was it the one lone man, gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald? Was there a magic bullet? Or was this a setup? The narrative is not that the president was killed. The narrative is how did the president got killed is the narrative. So there is an objective truth, but the world lives in narrative because the people spin narrative to explain the objective truth. And it is the job of you, of I, of a serious journalist to penetrate the narratives It's narrative is coming from the right, coming from the left, coming from up, coming from down, to penetrate the narrative and get to the heart of the matter, what happened. So when Chelsea Manning leaked the tapes of the chopper with five or six U.S. Army men with guns firing upon unarmed civilians, that's objective truth. That's the figure out there.
Okay.
And now the journalists and others for all these years have been running with their created narrative supplied by the Pentagon, supplied by the White House press room, supplied by the BBC, by the CBC, of what happened that afternoon in the streets of Baghdad. But once Julian Assange revealed Chelsea Manning's tape, people saw what happened. Unarmed citizen in broad daylight were shot down as animals.
For more than 2.5 years, the wire service Reuters has been trying to find out what happened to their two staff members on this street in the suburb of New Baghdad. WikiLeaks says this is what happened.
Yep, he's got a weapon too. Hotel 26, Crazy Horse 18, have 5 to 6 individuals with AK-47s. We got RPG.
The voice on the tape, presumably a member of the military, says there has been shooting in the area and receives permission to open fire.
When people are labeled as insurgents, are they really insurgents? It seems to be the case that from the scenes in this video, that any person that is not a man and sometimes not a woman is by default labeled as an insurgent.
Light them all up. Come on, fire!
Hey, Roger.
Keep shoot. Kyle?
Alright. I hit him, I had.
Oh yeah, look at those dead men.
Nice. 2-6, crazy.
From a distance, you hear the voices on the tape watch as the wounded try to crawl to help, but when help arrives...
Come on, let us shoot!
You're engaged.
1-8, engage. Clear.
Come on!
Clear.
Oh yeah, look at that, right through the windshield.
In this video, I think you see the corruption of pilots and the military by war itself, in particular by the modern nature of aerial warfare. So you see these young pilots acting like they're playing video games, only the high scores they are getting are with real human lives.
We call frequency.
Yeah, I just drove over a body.
Even from high above, the harsh reality becomes evident as the troops that arrive find two children wounded. You see them carry their small bodies and call for help.
Hey, I need to get the brass to drop ramps. I got a wounded girl. We need to take the rest of my ass.
The response on the tape.
Oh, it's their fault for bringing their kids to a battle.
That's right.
Paddy Culhane, Al Jazeera, Washington.
Julian Assange is a hero. This is a guy who stood up to the globalists and the war lobby, and he paid a serious price for doing that. He's a journalist. He received information, and he published it. And because of that, he was thrown in prison and was nearly killed. As a matter of fact, in the years since his arrest, it's been revealed that American intel agents planned to poison or kidnap him to keep him quiet before he got arrested on these fake charges in England. In a public statement, WikiLeaks said, quote, after more than 5 years in a 2x3 meter cell, isolated 23 hours a day, he will soon reunite with his wife, Stella Assange, and their children who have only known their father from behind bars. A WikiLeaks spokesman said also that, quote, WikiLeaks published groundbreaking stories of government corruption and human rights abuses, holding the powerful accountable for their actions. As editor-in-chief, Julian paid severely for these principles and for the people's right to know, end quote. Now, it's very important that we remember exactly who Julian Assange was before he was hunted down and taken prisoner by those who want to kill the truth. It's also important that we recognize that the people that are letting him go are the same people who worked with others worldwide to silence him and lock him up. They have no sense of justice. It just became too politically inconvenient to keep this guy behind bars because his case had become too much of a rallying cry for truth seekers and freedom activists. And let's remember that the people that he was fighting against still have a stranglehold on our country and the entire world today. Watch.
Because the goal is not to completely subjugate Afghanistan. The goal is to use Afghanistan to wash money out of the tax bases of the United States, out of the tax bases of European countries, through Afghanistan, and back into the hands of the transnational security. That is the goal, i.e. the goal is to have an endless war, not successful war.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And this brings us back to the symbolism of all of this and the bankruptcy of how bankrupt the West has become. Where would that conversation take us now, Salim?
The story of Julian Assange is the story of what has happened or what has evolved in terms of the United States from being a constitutional republic to becoming an empire of lies, a rogue state and an empire of lies. This is not something that happened overnight. It has happened over the last 70 plus years, 70, 75 years. President Eisenhower talked about that United States has become a military-industrial complex, right? There's the assassination of President Kennedy. There was the Vietnam War and series of these things. This is the actions of empire. So the question in my mind, the way I would construct it, is can an empire be a constitutional republic? And the answer of the last 75 years history is no. The empire cannot be a constitutional republic. That's why George Washington's favorite address was not to get involved in foreign wars, not to get involved with the politics of the old world. Quincy Adams, John Quincy Adams, son of John Adams, also a president, the sixth president of the United States, position was America doesn't go looking for monsters to destroy. But that's what we have been doing. What are we doing in Ukraine? That's America doing Ukraine. And by the way, Canada is involved in it. What is happening
that's
in Gaza?
That's a good point, because isn't Canada and the UK and Australia, to say the least, following the same path? They all have their own Julian Assanges.
Right.
Many of them spending the same kind of unbelievable time in solitary confinement, sitting in jails for nothing other than, you know, half of them, they're protesting in Canada and Ottawa a few years ago. What's going on, you know?
Well, empires have vassals and satellites, and then empire trying to control others and make them vassals and satellites.
So Canada is
so
one
Canada
of those satellites.
Canada is a vassal state. Canada was a vassal state in its origin and has continued to be a vassal state of the British. So we are talking of the British Empire, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, etc., etc.
The Anglosphere,
so
primarily.
The Anglos, exactly. Yeah. So the Five Eyes are the Anglo-American Empire. The American Empire is the successor to the British Empire, you know? So it's the Anglo-American Empire.
Right.
The empire doesn't have any Republican values. So the Constitution now is a facade. The story of Julian Assange, he's charged with the Espionage Act. When was the Espionage Act put together? 107 years ago, 1917, by Woodrow Wilson, that took America to war in 1917 after the winning the election in 1916, his re-election, that he would not take America into war. And that everything that happened to take America into war was built on lies. The Lusitania, the support for Britain, for the Balfour Declaration, the support for Zionism, all these are scams built on lies, okay? And then the American Empire comes into making after 1945. So Julian Assange was throwing a light, casting a beam, that's the WikiLeaks, upon the lies of the empire, right? And for that, he was going to be punished. Punished in a manner also that it would send a message to anybody else who dares shine a light on the activities of the empire. It is good. You know, we have all these conservatives, whether they're small C conservative or big C conservative, you know, they're on the right, they stand for freedom, they stand for free speech. And their model of criticism or example is, of course, Stalin. is Mao Zedong. It's easy to shine light on Stalin, on Mao Zedong, on Russia, on China, or on third world countries, you know, petty despots and dictators, right? And the empire of lies, America enjoys those guys, small c conservatives, throwing light on these people. But you dare not cast your light upon us, the empire.
Right.
Right? That's what is the story of Julian Assange. He was charged with Espionage Act in 1917. The Espionage Act has been charged, was used against many people in America in the First World War and the Second World War. But the case, from our perspective, the most recent, is the Daniel Ellsberg case, the Pentagon Papers. When Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers, was leaked. What was the Pentagon Papers? Pentagon Papers were the documents prepared on the requests or orders of the Defense Secretary Robert McNamara on America's engagement in Vietnam. And the Pentagon Papers, the file, the documents, was a display, a show that was prepared for the government by the analysts, the intelligence people, of how America's engagement in Vietnam had over time grown into a monstrosity. These are my words, you know, that America became engaged. At the end of it, 58,000 Americans died.
Yeah, I don't think they'd use the word monstrosity inside their own papers.
No, they didn't use it. But that was the Pentagon paper. It was prepared for the Defense Department, and Daniel Ellsberg was an analyst in the Defense Department working for Rand Corporation, and he leaked those papers. This is 1971, when the anti-Vietnam War protests were, you know, basically peaking. In 1968, Lyndon Johnson stepped down. He wouldn't run for a second term because of the demonstration, the anti-Vietnam War activity. You are young enough to remember that. I'm young enough to remember that. We were teenagers in the late 60s and early 70s.
Old enough to remember that.
Old enough to remember that. So he released it, you know. He was charged with the Espionage Act. And the publishers of the Pentagon Papers were the New York Times and the Washington Post. And the government charged them for releasing national security papers. And the matter went to the court, ultimately went into the Supreme Court. So there was a case, New York Times versus the United States. And by a decision of 6-3 of the Supreme Court justices, 6-3, the case was dismissed. And let me read to you, I brought with me a passage from Justice Hugo Black on the Supreme Court, writing on the decision of the SCOTUS. And this is what he said. Mm-hmm. The press was to serve the governed, not the governors. The government's power to censor the press was abolished so that the press would remain forever free to censure the government. The press was protected so that it bear the secrets of the government and inform the people. Only a free and unrestrained press can effectively expose deception in government. And paramount among the responsibilities of a free press is the duty to prevent any part of the government from deceiving the people and sending them off to distant lands to die of foreign fevers and foreign shot and shell. So press is the guardian of freedom.
Yeah,
according to the First Amendment.
It's supposed to be the Fourth Estate, isn't it?
Fourth Estate, exactly.
And that is the function of the Fourth Estate.
Precisely.
And as soon as you stop doing that, you're no longer in the Fourth Estate. What I find amazing that I've been watching lately is how members of the quote-unquote Fourth Estate want to sue other people for quoting them, for accuracies. I've had that happen to me. You know, we quoted CTV for something they said about some Canadian politician because we used it in one of our promotions.
Right.
And they came after us, and then we went back after them, and they acquiesced. But that's just how far they'll go.
Yeah, but you were not dealing with national security matters, so, you know, there was
no
nothing. So they were just harassed you.
Yeah,
they harassed me. But that's the decision of the Supreme Court of the United States. That's what I'm talking about. We are talking about the American Constitution. The crown jewel of the American Constitution is the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments. And the crown jewel of the Bill of Rights is the First Amendment. You might want me to read out to you the First Amendment for your audience, just to remind the people
What
we are talking about. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Free speech, free assembly, freedom of worship, all right? Press. So here it is. That's what Daniel Ellsberg's story is, that it keeps on recurring. In 1971, the Pentagon Papers in the post-1945 world, in the height of the Cold War, once again reestablish the primacy of First Amendment. What has happened between 1971 and now? Again, it got eroded because the empire cannot live and abide by the Constitution.
So many people now today are celebrating Julian Assange's release, his freedom, after about 12 years on the run. So how did this happen? Well, he just pled guilty to espionage as part of a deal with the U.S. Justice Department. Now, I don't know if you know this, but espionage can actually carry a death penalty. And espionage is a really big deal. But the DOJ under Biden has just said, well, time served. For what they've been saying is the largest espionage case in our country's history. I just want an understanding. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with Julian Assange being, freed and allowed to go. But really? I mean, that seems very magnanimous. But there was a deal made. We know that. And it was made in secret. Now, this, according to the New York Times, a quote, a secret hearing. Don't like it already. A secret hearing paved the way for his release. In the end, the choreographed multinational dance that led to his release took place behind closed doors at a secret bail hearing in London last Thursday, according to British officials. Now, the Aussies were involved in this. The British were involved in this. The Americans were involved. And my spider senses are tingling a bit. Now, this morning, early, we may have gotten maybe a tip, or it was a mistake, an accident. The X account and wokeness noticed something odd early, early this morning while you were asleep. All 20,000 leaked DNC emails have just been removed from WikiLeaks. Huh. Now, they say this is end wokeness, that this is part of the deal with Biden's DOJ, and everything now makes sense. Well, I don't know if that's true. My team did verify that while other hack archives on WikiLeaks are still up, including Hillary Clinton's emails, when you click on the DNC archive, it does produce a server error. That's odd, but maybe it just is a server error. Is this proof the DOJ coerced Assange to cover up their embarrassing secrets in exchange for his freedom? No, today it's a server error. Now, I've had server errors before, and my company can fix them pretty quickly. So, is this just a server error that's going to be fixed and all of those will be returned? We asked WikiLeaks to confirm if this was just a technical glitch or more evidence of a politically motivated and corrupt DOJ. We'll let you know if they come back to us with a response, but my gut says something very dirty happened here and we'll never actually know what happened in that secret meeting. Unless somebody from WikiLeaks gets their hands on some more documents. Then maybe we will know. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to trust law enforcement officials? to be in it for the law and not for themselves or for their cronies. Wouldn't it be nice? I'd like that. I'd like that on both sides. I'd like that not to happen with the Republicans. I'd like that not to happen with the Democrats. But maybe that's too much to hope for.
Clint Russell is with us now. Clint, no wonder they wanted to throw this guy in jail.
You ain't lying, Stu. I'm libertarian. I've been libertarian forever. Julian Assange is a hero to people like me. He's a hero. I think he ought to be a hero to everyone in America, honestly. A journalist that shed light on the war crimes of the military-industrial complex. He shed light on the State Department crimes that lead to these wars. He's been an incredible tool in essentially shattering the narrative that they try and paint to drag us into war.
We were talking to somebody that's close to Donald Trump, who had said to us a few weeks ago that it was Trump's plan to announce that should he be elected, that he would be pardoning Julian Assange. Do you suppose that the ruling regime kind of forecasted that and they're trying to take wins from the sale?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. In fact, I have some behind the scenes information because I was running for the vice president of the United States under the Libertarian Party. And I know for a fact that the Libertarian Party chair, Angela McArdle, has been in communications with the Trump team. And that was our biggest ask. Honestly, that was the thing that we were pushing for the hardest. Now, whether or not that ultimately played a role in their decision making in terms of Trump's decision making to consider a pardon, I will say definitively, in my opinion, that the Biden administration absolutely did this, not just to take the wins out of Donald Trump's sale, but also out of RFK Jr.'s sale, who has been talking about building a statue to Julian Assange and Edward Snowden. I think that they are trying to cut their opposition off at the pass.
Salim, with all these protections that the American public in particular has, the First Amendment, the Constitution, what has obsessed or gotten into so many of the officials of the government that think that they can just override it? Like, how has that even gotten that far? Like, they just gave themselves a whole new set of purposes outside of the Constitution?
In a way, they did. And that is what I was saying, you know, this did not happen overnight. This is an evolution that took place, and the warning signs were there, and people talked about it. And I'm repeating myself, President Eisenhower, you know, warned the people to be wary of, to be cautious
well,
about.
Well, that's one thing, but how did the people who are actually doing these violations, where did they get the idea that they could?
So there it is. When President Eisenhower, in his final address, mentioned, actually the term that was written down and it was edited in his speech was military industrial congressional complex.
Oh.
So congressional was dropped because he did not want to irritate the people in the Congress. But now, that was in 1961, President Eisenhower spoke. Now, how many years later we are? We are 63 years later discussing this. So what do we need to, in a sense, redefine the military industrial congressional complex as? So it is military, industrial, congressional, big pharma, think tank complex, you know. So what has happened? Other interest groups have gotten together. What are interest groups? That is money, you know, and money laundering and buying over your representatives, that is the people's representative, who are in effect responsible to protect the people's rights. That is the Constitution. Okay? So we now have the situation where 535 members in the Congress, the first loyalty is to AIPAC, who basically own the congressmen and women and the senators, you know, or to whichever, the military-industrial complex. So you vote and send John Doe to the House of Representatives and Jane Doe to the House of Representatives, because during the election season, they're all for you, they all stand with you, and so on and so forth. Same thing in Canada. And once they're there ensconced in the seat, the lobbyists come in, the money flows, and they are defending what America has become, an empire and what Washington, D.C. has become, what Donald Trump talked about, the swamp, the deep state, the administrative state. Okay? So they make the laws. It is not the congressmen and women who are making the laws. They are presented with the laws, that is the draft of the statutes, and then they stamp it. You know? That's what is happening. All right? We saw that in the COVID period.
Well, most politicians that I know were not elected out of any sort of philosophical basis. They all got into politics for very pragmatic reasons, sometimes just their popularity, sometimes their connections. And when it even comes to understanding the Constitution or the basic premise of government, they're as lost as a newborn child. I've run into this all my life. You almost can't have a conversation with them on the level we're talking right now.
Right. And you're not supposed to have it.
Because, not supposed to.
Because those are taboo subjects. There are taboo subjects that you cannot get into. And we saw that in the Canadian Parliament. We saw that how is it that, you know, 338 members were standing and clapping and raising their arms for a Waffen SS soldier as a hero.
I'm still shaking my head over that.
Right. But that is the tip of the iceberg. That means that 338 members, it doesn't matter, left or right, liberals or NDP or conservatives or green, those are simply the T-shirt or the cap that people are wearing, like the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox and others. And, you know, you cheer your team. But once you are inside the ring, you're playing the game for the deep state, the Canadian deep state. The British deep state, the man who prosecuted or tried to prosecute and held Julian Assange in Belmarsh prison from 2019 on the request of the American, that is Donald Trump's administration, was the Crown Prosecution Service's chief, Sir Keith Starmer. Sir Keith Starmer is the Labour leader, and he might become the Prime Minister of England after the July 4th general election in England, in Britain. Mm. So it's not a left-right thing. It is the empire that is dictating what will be allowed to the people. So we have this facade. Now the word narrative that you like to use. We have the narrative that we are a democratic country with a constitution. We saw what happened to the constitution on Valentine's Day, February 2022, in Canada, when on the stroke of the midnight, so to speak, there was no charter of freedom. The truckers were all driven out, bludgeoned out of Ottawa, some arrested, and so on and so forth. Same thing happened on January 6, 2021. People assemble. That's direct violation of First Amendment. People assemble in Washington to hear President Trump give his speech. He asked them to come. What happened? The Congress ended up calling them insurrectionists, yeah, and put them in prison, or many of them in prison, right? They lured them into the Capitol, opened the Capitol, lured them into the Capitol, and then slammed them as insurrectionists who had invaded the Capitol.
What was amazing about that is we were watching that live, and we could see that that was what was happening. And right. they didn't seem to care that there's thousands of people out there with their own little cell phone cameras that are recording the reality of it, and they just go on lying as though none of us saw what we saw with our own eyes.
So there it is, the empire of lies.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who the president is.
Well, so how do normal people... How does the public get back in control of its government? Is that the answer through Donald Trump? Is the answer through some kind of real insurrection? Like, where do we go from here?
Well, I mean, it's a very deep and broad question, but the public will always remain the public. Misinformed, uninformed, disinformed.
That's my fear.
You know, and some elements of the public will be awakened, and that's the struggle that goes on. It is not a new struggle. It is the eternal struggle. It is a struggle which is Sisyphean by nature. So Daniel Assange, as Julian Assange was, I don't know why I call him Daniel, but you know, Julian Assange was, somehow the word Dan is stuck in my head. Mm-hmm. Julian Assange was basically trying to shine the light upon what has become of our Western culture, civilization, and you know, the narrative of freedom, individual rights, and so on and so forth. And the fact of the matter, it doesn't exist. It is Donald Trump's Secretary of State, who was the director of CIA, Mike Pompeo, who went public saying that Julian Assange should be assassinated. Yeah, what was his crime? His crime was exactly no more, no less than Daniel Ellsberg's crime. I know where the conflation is. I'm thinking about Daniel Ellsberg. Yeah. So Daniel Ellsberg. Daniel Ellsberg released the Pentagon paper. Julian Assange and the WikiLeaks release the thousands of files that were Hillary Clinton's, which she, as a Secretary of State, was, you know, exchanging with her people, not from the State Department's secure server, but from a private server, which became an issue in 2016 election. Yeah. How many people remember that? But in those 33,000 emails that Julian Assange released were the correspondence between Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and as one of the shareholders of the Clinton Global Initiative, that is her husband and she, and the laundering of money that was going on between the United States, that is through the CIA, to Saudi Arabia, to Egypt, who were then sending the money and the weapon to ISIS to attack the Syrians. That's exactly what, unbeknownst to the American ambassador in Libya, I'm now forgetting his name, who, when informed about the problem, went to investigate the problem from Tripoli to Benghazi, and there he died. You see? Because he went to investigate the two arms of the government. One is the open diplomatic arm of the government. The other is the secret arm of the government, the CIA, the deep state. And the deep state were engaged in financing and arming the very people who they claim are the ones who did 9/11. Now we know that a 9/11 was an inside job.
Well, it turns out that it looks like, you know, from our perspective, the deep state is the left, and we're the right. We're on the right side of all of this.
That satisfies you. That's fine. To me, you know, we have to completely step away. It is.
No, I understand the difference between left wing and right wing. In fact, it's one of the biggest things I thought.
It's a call sign of the just right.
But you know, this whole eternal vigilance you talked about it. You know, I think that's what's required,
there almost needs to be a.
Well, I guess the new media is arising right now through the social media. The internet has made things possible that were not possible before.
And that has been taken away. I mean, the SCOTUS decision was in support of the government's position to censor the social media.
Oh, I know. That shows you how terrified they are of us. Anyway, Salim, that's all the time we've got for today. I guess some people might be asking, are we a PSYOP? are we the controlled opposition, or are we just the uncontrolled opposition? Yeah. Well, you can find out by joining us again next week, when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be all right.
By order of Her Majesty the Queen, we have arrived! You over there! What is the name of this land?
This land over here?
This is called India. Well, my good man, I am here to tell you that India is now under the British Empire.
And I'm glad that I can tell you that India is exactly where it was yesterday.
How dare you speak to me like that? Do you know who I am?
No, because you never introduced yourself.
I have come here representing Great Britain.
And I have never heard of Great Britain. Who gave you that name? Well, we did. You called yourselves great? Isn't that a little presumptuous? Shouldn't you wait for other people to tell you how great you are? Huh? Shouldn't you just go around the world and just do good things, good things, good things? Then people go, oh my God, Britain, look how great you are.